This reading is from Whispers from Eternity by Paramahansa Yogananda. I'm going to read just three stanzas from a longer poem that Yogananda wrote entitled God, God, God. From the depths of slumber, as I ascend the spiral stairway of wakefulness, I will whisper, God, God, God. No matter where I go, the spotlight of my mind will ever keep turning on Thee. And in the battle din of activity, my silent war cry will be, God, God, God. In waking, eating, working, dreaming, sleeping, serving, meditating, chanting, divinely loving, my soul will constantly hum, unheard by any, God, God, God. This reading is, it's such a, in a way, a simple and lovely instructional message from Jesus to us. Really saying, in essence, you are a part of all that is. So everything that you do, every thought that you have, every act affects everyone. And it is your job, your purpose, your role in life, really the reason that your soul has manifested here is so you can practice that and know that and begin to feel the ways that we are all a part of one great consciousness. It's so fascinating being here. You can only see me, of course, but we're in our big temple and there are eight of us here practicing our social distancing. So there's even one of us up in the balcony. And yet, I've felt this each week that we've been here. There's such a sense of connection to all of you, wherever you're watching from, wherever your homes are, certainly to each other in this church. But with all of you, there is something about not having the human bodies here, whether it's the distraction of what clothes people are wearing, whether they're talking to each other, even the looks on their faces, it's so easy to expand one's consciousness and to feel the connection at a much more purely spiritual level with everyone. So it's just particularly wonderful to have this reading in this setting. I really feel each and every one of you. As I was sitting there, I had this experience. I mean, who knows what these things are and what tricks the mind might be playing, but I thought, I can even feel not just those souls that I know so well, but that there are some of you who are brand new. Just feels that way to me. Yet we've all come together in such a rich and pure way. I had a very interesting experience a few days ago. I was talking to a friend, and I started to complain about another woman that we both knew. And I was expressing verbally a lot of judgment and a lot of angst about something that this other person had done. And even as the words were coming from me, I had no idea what the reading was today yet, by the way. Even as those words were coming out of my mouth, I was here saying to myself, Shanti, why are you saying these things? Why did you even have this thought? This is terrible for you. This is terrible for your friend who you're speaking to. But, and I'm outing myself here, it was like I was standing here watching my mouth over here. It was just going like this, and I couldn't stop it. I knew it was so wrong what I was doing, right from the moment of even having had the thought. And I felt contracted. I felt smaller than how I usually feel in my, whatever my given state of consciousness is. It was a very bad feeling. As I was walking later, I don't know why this came to me like this, but I had a memory that was at least 10 years ago. It could have been more. I was in Washington, D.C., and I had rented a car with a GPS in it. And in those days, global positioning system, it means, of course, nowadays we all know that. It's rather a miracle in my mind. It's just this little thing you have on your phone or in the car, and it sort of tells you where you are and where you're going and how to get there. I actually looked it up this morning. It's based on 30 satellites around the whole world. Isn't that amazing? 30 little things placed around the world. It just tells us everything. It guides us. But 10 or 12 years ago, it was not as good. It was night, it was raining, I was in a city, I didn't know that well. And my GPS system drove me to some deserted construction site. It was actually very, very frightening. But that story just popped into my mind not that long after I had been watching myself just think and feel and say these really condemning things about this other person. And I thought to myself, GPS, global positioning system. And I thought, I need one of those, but I need a consciousness positioning system. It just came to me. And then I said, of course you have one. You have a guru. Why don't you just open to that guidance more often? That's what it is. It's a consciousness positioning system. And I didn't fortunately continue to beat myself up, but it's exactly what this reading is telling us, that when we move into those contracted states, when Maya gets a hold of us, when negative thoughts enter, we need to do everything we can do, as quickly as we can do it, to move to what we know to be true, to what we read every Sunday, we read everywhere in all of our teachings, that we are a part of all that is, that we have all descended, been made manifest from that same one consciousness. Therefore, we are all connected to each other, and that everything that we do, and again, just like I was saying and what I realized, even if I had not uttered the words, the very thought that I had, because it's part of the vibration, was going to do a great deal of harm, not just to that person, but to me and to the person that I was speaking with. And that our job in this life is to do exactly what Swamiji titled this talk, or this reading. He called it deeds versus intentions. I think speaking to how often our intentions and our deeds are not aligned. But what we're here to do is align our deeds, which are not just actions, but thoughts, feelings, with our intentions. And when that happens perfectly, then we have attained self-realization. That's our goal. We are constantly realigning everything that we do to reach that goal of self-realization. Recently, our KQED here, which is our educational television station, has been doing a little special on an event that happened 50 years ago called Woodstock. I'm sure some of you out there have heard of it. And I just realized as I was thinking about it last night, maybe many of you have not. This was 50 years ago in 1969, actually coming up on 51 now. And it was a major world event in a way. It started out to be a music festival that was supposed to be a big money-making event. But it was even interesting at that because all of the music of that time, or so much of the music, at least who was going to be performing at Woodstock, which were dozens and dozens of all of the very well-known performers of that time, were people who had written music and who were playing music about peace, about equality, really stemming from the fact that we were involved in a war, which again is ancient history now, but we were involved in the Vietnam War. There were many, many young people who were opposed to us being in that war. And the people who were putting Woodstock together said, let's do a music festival. We'll invite all of these great musicians. They found a piece of land, it's a much bigger story than this, up in upstate New York, and they imagined that maybe 75,000 people would come. They wondered if they were just being ridiculous, even with that number, that why would 75,000 people come? Well, 500,000 people wound up coming. People heard about it. They heard who was performing. They could feel the energy of the event, which was very much about peace, which was very much about love. And people just came. And so many people came, they had to literally close down the New York thruway. I mean, these huge highways in New York, people had to park 7 and 8 miles away because for that long, it was a parking lot. They took out of their cars what they could carry, and they walked, and there were 500,000 people. Now, what's remarkable about this? It rained most of the time. Many times they had to pull all of the electrical plugs of the sound equipment because they were afraid of the water. People had no way. 15 people would be under one little plastic sheet. They planned food for 75,000. They planned bathrooms for 75,000. Why is Woodstock to this day thought of the way it is? Really, the essence of it, this is what I realized as I was watching the next little segment of it last night, is because they aligned so beautifully their intention with their deed. The people who pulled this whole thing together, who realized not that far into it, this is not going to be the money-making event we thought it was. In fact, we can't even collect money. We have no way to do that. And they turned it into a magnificent expression of deep and true and pure love, of pure peace, which is a divine quality. very much like what David just said when he said, meditate on joy. It's a divine quality. So is peace. And that's what happened at Woodstock. That's why it was so remarkable. Not one act of violence. A half a million people crammed together. No food, no bathrooms, no way to sleep, no shelter from the rain. Never, literally, not one act of violence. People reaching out in every way they could to help each other, to love each other, to support each other. It was a remarkable event that everybody's talking about. It was, in many ways, for this country, for the United States, one of the first expressions of mass like that, spirituality. People were just first starting to talk about spirituality in that way. And they may not have said this exactly, but they behaved it, they acted it, which we know from an energy point of view is every bit as important as knowing the words behind it. They became peace. They opened their hearts. Their deeds were aligned with their intentions. And I will tell you, because I had, it's interesting, I've heard Ananta speak about this too at times, because those of us who are this age, if we were at all involved in the peace movement, we were involved in peace demonstrations. We called them that, peace demonstrations. But I remember I was living in DC at the time. I was terrified. I went, but I was terrified because the deeds were not aligned with the intentions. There was so much violence. There was so much hatred. There was so much anger being expressed in the name of peace. It didn't work. It doesn't work. Woodstock is still speaking to the world because of the higher consciousness and the alignment. This is precisely what Swami Kriyananda has done with Ananda. It was his dream, it was his vision, it was to live from a place of elevated and expanded consciousness and to make sure that everything that is Ananda, everything that was made manifest here, every chant, that song that Karen and Tandava just sang, and the way they sang it, having listened to Swamiji, having been trained by him, of course, they're both fabulous musicians in their own right, but they've been on this path for a long time. That was so moving, not just the words, not just the notes, that too, of course, but the consciousness behind all of it and in these two singers, in every reading, in every book, in the colors, in the style, everything speaks to aligning, to being great seekers of truth. Swamiji taught us, because if we're true seekers of truth, it's not just what we do, it's how we do it. It's the attitude with which we do it. It's making sure that it all is raising our consciousness. He exemplified that for us. That's what exists here today because of him. Now, of course, this is challenging, but here's what we know. If we look for that spark of light in each person, in each being, in every soul, in every situation, if I had stopped earlier this week and said, okay, the thought came to me to be critical, I'm going to sit and hold that person up in my mind and all the, of her true beauty, that spark of light that is her. When we do that, those veils of delusion disappear. And we see that spark everywhere. We have to. We've all descended from that same light. If we look, the light is always there, always. If we look hard enough, we see it. It's beholden upon us to change our vision, to change our mind, to change our attitude, to live always in a state. I mean, Patanjali said it, every great spiritual teacher says it, of non-violence, of non-lying, of non-stealing. This means don't judge people, don't criticize them. And of course it's hard, but that's what we're here to do, is to practice that. And we have so many ways of doing it. I'll take just a few moments to tell a story that I think many of us have heard, but it so exemplifies the way this can happen. So this is the story of the five monks who were living in a church, and they had not had sort of any new blood, if you will, in a long time. So the five of them had been living together alone. They were getting old, they were getting cranky, they weren't getting along. And the head abbot said to himself, this is terrible what we're doing. And nobody was coming to the church. Very few people would come to pray on Sundays. And he said to himself, I'm going to go visit my friend. He had a rabbi who was a friend who had a little synagogue not far away. And the abbot went, and he was telling the rabbi, things just aren't going well. We're not getting along. Nobody's coming. We really need people to come. Maybe that would help us. The rabbi just saw it and thought, and he listened. He listened to his friend and said, it really, really is a problem. I see that. He didn't seem to offer any suggestions. But as the abbot got up to leave, he said to him, you know, one of you there is a great saint. One of you, at least, is a great saint. And the abbot left, and he's thinking, one of us is a great saint? How could that be? And he gets back to the church, and he tells the other monks, this is what the rabbi said. One of us is a great saint. He said, at least one of us is a great saint. So they all just started looking at each other. Could it be this one who acts so childish all the time? We've hated how childish he is. And then they said, well, you know, Jesus did say, suffer ye little children as unto the children. And each time they had something critical to say about each other, it would come to one or the other. They could find the spiritual quality in it. And because they weren't sure who that one was, they all started treating each other so beautifully as if they were speaking to God, as if they were reacting to God. And of course, it's not hard to figure out what the end of this story is. They started seeing the best in each other. They were behaving differently. Their consciousness was raised. Their hearts were open. And people started coming to the church. And more and more and more people started coming, because they were magnetically drawn to that light that doesn't just exist within each of us. That is who and what we are. And if we look for that everywhere, we will find it everywhere. It was the furthest thing from these monks' minds, the furthest thing. They were living in the consciousness I was living in a few days ago. And yet, it really didn't take much. I remember one time some years ago, somebody misbehaved at a meeting. I wasn't there. I was actually supposed to be at the meeting, but I wasn't. And then I heard about the behavior. And I said, well, did anybody speak up and say anything? No, nobody did. So I met with the person, and we were struggling with each other. He was justifying why he had behaved that way. And then I just stopped for a minute and I said, let me ask you a question. If Swami Kriyananda had been in the room, would you have behaved that way? He said, of course not. I rested my case. We are amongst millions of divine beings. Every person we meet has that spark of divine right at their core. Wouldn't it be wonderful to just look at each other all the time and see that? And then we become that. The veil disappears. We raise our consciousness. That's what we're magnetizing then, is that divine light. We ourselves become more of it. We live much more as we are truly meant to be. We live in our state of God consciousness, and all we did was just keep trying moment by moment by moment to see the God in everyone. I'd like to end by reading something, again, something I heard Ananta read once, and I looked it up. It's from a letter that Paramahansa Yogananda wrote to Rajasi, who he spoke of as being his most spiritually highly evolved disciple. This is a letter that he wrote to him. Think God, enjoy God, live God, love God, dream God, do all things for God. Walk, talk, think, work, move, and carry on business for God alone.
From the depths of slumber, as I ascend the spiral stairway of wakefulness, I will whisper, whisper, God, God. The food, and when I break my fast of nightly separation from thee, I will taste thee and mentally say, God, God, God. No matter where I go, the spotlight of my mind will ever keep turning on thee. And in the battle din of activity, my silent war cry will be, God, God, God. When boisterous storms of trials shriek, and when worries howl at me, I will drown their noises, loudly chanting, God, God, God. When my mind weaves dreams, with threads of memory. that magic cloth will I emboss. God, God, God. Every night in time of deepest sleep, when my peace dreams and calls joy, joy, my joy comes singing evermore. God, God, God. In waking, eating, working, dreaming, sleeping, serving, meditating, chanting, divinely loving, my soul will constantly hum, unheard by any. God, 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 God.